This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Why is there dead air? Oh, because I failed to plug the music in.
Take a seat. Rattle the bed, sat on the stairs, say you leave. The cabinets are bare, and I'm unaware of just how we got into this mess. Got so aggressive, I know we meant all good intentions. So pull me closer, why don't you pull me close? Why don't you come on over? I can't just let you go. Oh, baby, why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. So why don't you just meet me in the middle? In the middle. Baby.
In the middle. Joining me for the first time in months after he's refused to come on is Chris Woodbridge, the editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette, retired Marine Corps colonel, and the publisher of Leatherneck Magazine. What do you have to say for yourself, Woodbridge, refusing to declining all the...
Hey, I'm being misrepresented, Mac. There was no refusal involved.
Fake news. Wow. I can't believe we went there right off the bat, but there we are. So what have you been doing? How you been? How's everything at the Gazette?
It's real good. It's been a busy summer. A lot of irons in the fire, not necessarily directly connected to the magazine, but supporting efforts going on, and I can talk in detail about those as we go on, but I've been gainfully employed, I'll put it to you that way.
You've been busy. I can accept that. What, you know, I came by looking for you. I was on the East Coast. Actually, I went to General Furness's change of command at Camp Lejeune.
Okay.
And then I've got a son in Quantico, so out of the basic school teaching, so I went up there and spent a few days, and I came looking for you. Your offices close promptly in the afternoon, I noticed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I was like, it's 5:03. Like, yeah, hey, sorry.
Yeah, and we try to secure the building at that point.
We don't
pay overtime.
I'm not going to tell you. I looked for a trash can. I'm like, this aggression will not stand against me. Where's a trash can to fire through the window? But I did not do that. I appreciate it. I seized on my wellness practices and did a few breathing exercises and got back in my car. Just so you know, I did come looking for you. I'll ask you a general question. State of the Marine Corps. Give me two big challenges that the Marine Corps faces today.
Oh, I think right now, probably the biggest challenge is, my opinion, and based on some of the things that come across the transom, articles, et cetera, number one big challenge is, getting our arms around what forced entry, all right, our mission, if you will, as a service, our service-defining mission and capability, forced entry operations. What does that really mean as we start moving into later in the first quarter of the 21st century? And then how do we message that? How do we define that and message it internally to the Corps? Externally in the joint force and distant externally in the department and especially in Congress, defining it in terms that those different audiences can relate to. So the fact of the matter is the character of forced entry operations has changed whether we like it, realize it, or fully understand it or not. And there seems to be a paucity of, critical thinking going on about what those changes, the effects of those changes really are. There's some good, hard work getting done right now, prompted by language in the National Defense Authorization Act to kind of re-examine roles and missions. But what that really boils down to is what is the character, the nature of forced entry? What new constraints, limitations are there, and what solutions or capability-based solutions are we proposing? This really defines the Marine Corps. How that first definition goes directly influences the nature of our service and to a larger degree the naval service as well. That question has not gotten the level of intellectual activity that I think it needs. The bright shining intellectual light has sort of shifted over to what I'll call operations in the information environment, cyber domain.
Yeah, that's pretty sexy stuff. And in the meantime, the Navy stops buying amphibious shipping, and your
correct
stated role and mission, and then even the ones they have that are quote unquote active can't get to sea. And anybody who's been part of operations in either MEF and is looking to do amphibious work, you keep looking at the list of ships and their availability, and they struggle to get to sea, and that's just a fact.
That's correct, and as things currently stand, that is not going to get better. That's only going to get worse from the perspective of ship availability. So if that's now reduced and potentially off the table, what does that mean to forced entry? So that's a 100-weight question, 100-weight intellectual issue that we have to solve, in our brains first, before we start committing resources, meaning start buying things, or programming things, or changing training programs, or changing organization in the Marine Corps. So the things that we have control over, the organized, train, equip piece, before we start making that those rudder changes, doing the intellectual work on the front end, and I believe that this is not a secret. This is not inside the house, and it's one of the reasons that language was put into the NDAA was to prompt the or force the study, force the intellectual effort first, and then use that to inform the other decisions.
I think it's frustrating for everybody that has watched it, because without stating so much, the Navy has forced this on the DOD and by procurement decisions. And so it hasn't been come out been debated and stated. It's simply been off-ramped. We're not buying that. We're not doing that. We're not. And now that we have hypervelocity missiles, what are we going to do? Put them in a boat and get them smoked? So how does that all work together? But I'm not a big hypervelocity guy there, Woody.
I do agree with you there.
So you can shoot it a million miles an hour, and you can shoot it 10 million miles. I got it. How are you going to see the target?
Right.
Oh.
First, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about artillery, the 500-yard line, doesn't matter. Number one requirement for accurate fire is target location.
Yeah, you got to find it. And so riddle me how – and look, so if you want to smoke Mount Rushmore, I guess you could probably do that. Okay.
You can't move, and we got a 10-digit grid for it.
Yeah, Mount Rushmore moves 5 feet, and you got an issue. You got a targeting problem. So, but no, interesting. All right, that's number one. And that so core role and mission. Yeah, yikes. Number two.
I think number two is not going to surprise a lot of folks. Perhaps, but I think it's more of a software issue. I think it has to do with maintaining the hearts and minds of the Marines that we lead, maintaining that fight. I don't think it's a we're not at a critical crisis point, tipping point, etc. But I think there are, and you and I have talked about this at length. There have been some insidious changes in sort of the accepted character of deck plate leadership, Marine Corps leadership at the kind of the front line level. And I'm not talking about combat leadership in a combat environment, but it certainly can have influence there.
Absolutely.
Or can have effects there. There have been generational changes in the character of young Americans, people in this country. There are consequently generational changes in the echelons of leadership in the Marine Corps, with in some cases more senior folks, just not getting it, not being in touch with what is important to some of our younger Marines and how they learn, how they absorb information, how do you reach them, and by reaching them, how do you lead them, and do everything that is required of leaders, accomplish the mission, and have an eye out for the welfare of these young folks. So what worked even 10 years ago may not anymore, and so trying to keep up with that pace of change, I think, is creating some generation gaps in the Marine Corps, and that along with an awful lot of other environmental factors that are cultural environmental factors in the country right now are creating divisions within the body of the Marine Corps. The simple fact is, we have to maintain cohesion first and foremost in order to leverage that into combat effectiveness and combat readiness, and divisiveness, divisions, a generation gap, but not understanding, that can undermine that cohesion. And it's not unique to the Marine Corps. This is across all the services, and as always, is a reflection of the country at large, I think.
Okay, I have some things that you need to publish.
Okay.
All right. So I'm giving you an order, Woody.
Written work.
I'm giving you an order because you're junior. Your boot ass is junior to mine. Okay. So you know how it works. So stand by to copy. I've coined a term. It's called post-traumatic winning. Okay? And it lays out the mental health path of a warrior from the time they join the Marine Corps, where you learn to keep your honor clean, throughout your career, as your understanding of mental health, the way we do this, what makes people go, the things you're talking about, progressively deepens and broadens, all right? And you study things like, again. Now, I don't want to, don't judge me when I say this, because it's going to be a bit intellectual for a boot knuckle dragger like you. So, you study things like Viktor Frankl. You study Admiral Stockdale's leadership at the Hanoi Hilton, in which they came out with 2% PTSD rate. What? And you study those things. And then you are you familiar with the guys at Boulder Crest, what they're doing? They do training on relative to post combat related mental health and living the life that you want to live, right? Two of the two largest stressors relative to PTSD are financial and relationships. They're not combat, right? Combat changes us marginally as human beings. So the proposition that many would pose to us is, you know, the most driven, bravest, toughest, and selfless warriors then come home and are disabled. Like, I will never believe that. So, but if I say, hey, look, I can train you to recognize it, to deal with it, to off-ramp it, and that way stay between the left and right lateral limits of your life and live the life that you want to live, you interested? You up for it? And the answer to that would be not only yes, but of course yes. Right, and so
it's interesting. Those stressors. That's in no way unique to
right.
Hold on.
You're getting ahead of me, Woody. Okay, so again, you're junior, so relax. I love this right now. That's the part of learning to coexist with trauma, because it never goes away. Okay. Now, a footnote about trauma. Does it matter if I've been to Iraq and Afghanistan for close to 3 years and saw stuff that certainly traumatic, and my sister's two sons were shot in the head by her husband, who then committed suicide in front of her? Does it matter where your trauma comes from? Is it possible that you could be traumatized by child abuse or sexual abuse as a child, and you bring that to our Marine Corps? Because I think most of us would say most of the suicide in the Marine Corps today has nothing to do with combat. So what gives? So you're going to live with trauma your whole life, and we've got to come to a better understanding of it. The way you turn it into a win, first of all, we're Marines. We're not content to grow or coexist with shit, right? We come back home with our arms around, you know, what's our mental health status and what we've been through. We have a decent understanding, because our culture at least talks about it. The civilian culture, they don't live in a culture like that.
That's right.
And so we are, first of all, we're warriors that have come back home. We have a special place in the community. And when you can touch, and I know because this keeps happening to me, when you can touch people and say, it's okay, and this is the best part about our culture. There are these simple truths that get passed down from generation to generation of Marines, shit like I got told after the first time I dealt with death in the Marine Corps. You know you're never going to get over this. What did you say? You know you're never going to get over this. Like, who told you that? Vietnam guys. So, and then Jeremiah Workman tells a story, like, from a Vietnam veteran. Jeremiah, don't let the monkeys out of the cage, right? When you do, all hell breaks loose. Those are simple pieces of information that are full of wisdom. And when you share those with civilians, they look at you and they say, are you a therapist? Like, no, I'm a Marine infantryman. What? What? But it's, and then what you go through is you tell them, you're okay. You're going to be okay. You're going to learn. You'll be able to learn to coexist with this. So giving them hope and touching their lives. And then you have a Grinch moment when the Grinch hears the Who people and his heart grows. And that is when we return home, that all that we've been through is, it's still living a purpose-driven life, right? Impacting the lives of others. And then we're truly home, you know, reaping the benefits of this life that we, this purpose-driven life that we lead. So I'm going to send you some stuff that I put together.
Yeah,
on
please
it.
Do. Please do. This actually fits in with a number of articles we've published over the last, you know, several months.
Okay.
They're kind of loosely binned in a leadership category, but in a lot of ways these are exactly the sorts of issues or I don't even call it issues. These are techniques that you're describing and
but,
resources.
But to me, what's exciting, though, is to do this on the front end with active duty Marines, not on the back end trying to learn about it. This is what
right.
you're going to go through, okay? And so when it happens to you, just know it's out there, right? Know that you're not going to get over it. What? Yeah, I never heard a therapist tell me that, but I heard my gunny say that to me. Yeah,
therapists go out of business if they.
Yeah, I heard his.
Some would.
Yeah, I heard his. You know, high school educated ass tell me that. I heard workmen, and then I hear, and I have these other sayings. Well, wait a minute. Where did those menses learn it? Because they didn't think it up, I'll tell you that. Right? They got it from Korean War veterans and World War II veterans. Where did they get it?
Exactly.
Guys who fought in the banana wars. You know, and so this is this oral history largely migrated through our enlisted ranks that is resident in our culture about how to deal with this. And I think that if we can, and I'll send you some stuff on Boulder Crest Retreat and what they're doing, because I think you ought to write about them. But
yeah, please do.
But here's the proposition is, right, you can either be trained, like you got trained on how to shoot the Carl Gustav, how to call in an airstrike, how to become a cyber warrior. You can do all that, but you can't learn about PTSD, and you can't function with your trauma. Bullshit, man. I completely reject that. And we know because we've seen the human capital we work with. But yet, what is the course of action? It's here's the zombie cocktail, anxiety, sleep, depression, anger. Here you go. And go to group therapy.
Right.
Yeah. And so there's
Here's the magic powder. And right. Here's a group of guys to go talk with.
Right. Right. And there's a better way.
There's some, preventative aspect to this that is a training function, and I think to a certain degree, and having certainly having worked on the training side multiple times, there's a hesitancy to pursue that at the service level. In some cases, it's yeah, it's just dismissed as another fad, and this is not something that we're going to waste government resources and time of Marines on. Or we'll incorporate it into other training, or the ever popular, well, that's commander's prerogative sort of thing. Individual commanders develop programs for that, and we can make some resources available online for them. We've danced around it for quite some time, at least the last 17 years, if not longer.
Right.
And I think honestly, the other obstacle to productive progress in this, in some ways, is the psychiatric medical establishment. I'm not anti doctors. I'm not anti medical establishment. I'm not anti psychiatry, psychology, what have you. I think it's when that becomes, for want of a better term, in the military context, its own bureaucracy, with self-regulating bureaucracy, when it becomes a business of sorts, buying and selling various treatments. Then that just becomes the answer. And it becomes the answer to the exclusion of a lot of other things, to include the preventative side, the proactive side.
Well, let me offer this to you. If we were clearing in a city, right, and because you're junior to me, that's going to be a theme of this hour, just so you know, and you come up to me and you say, sir, I want to conduct an L-shaped ambush down the street. And I look at you and I say, Woody, get your ass away from me and don't ever say stupid shit. It's a misapplication of a technique, right? Clearly
right.
Not what we're doing as we're clearing. And so any technique misapplied is wrong, is wrongheaded.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with the technique, but I would submit to you that the percentage of people affected by trauma that go to the VA that actually should be medicated is extremely small. To me, there's a triage process that is absent, and there's a training piece that is absent. And I hesitate to say, if you got the VA involved in what Boulder Crest does, they'd screw it up in 3 minutes, right? So you don't want big bureaucracy involved in it. And so to me, but there's a small percentage of Marines, right? There's a small percentage of the population that requires
that requires
medication and
yes.
and more substantial mental health therapy. I got no issue. Absolutely. So I'm like you. I'm not a hater of that. I think it's over applied. It's applied. And what happens? When was the last time you heard somebody say, "God, I had just had the best therapy session at the VA with my guy"? When was the last time you heard that?
I don't think I've ever heard.
Yeah. Nobody. I mean, I had a good experience because both my guys, just by coincidence, were Vietnam infantry guys.
Yeah.
And that never happens. You never, like you said, nobody said things you've never heard in your life. Hey, Grandpa, stay right here. I want to show you my participation medal I got in soccer. Nobody even says that, right? Because it has no value because they didn't earn it. And so to me, it's the misapplication of a technique which you can apply to any trade, you can apply to any business, you can apply to tactics, and it's wrong. And so mental health providers have their place. I think we've sought too much from them. We try and we push people towards them that don't belong there.
Right. Yeah, and it's become the default option.
Right.
And it's become
the option.
The
right?
option. And yeah. for senior leaders, it's become an easy mental shortcut because it's very low risk. I know that the
Hold on. Let me comment on your low risk. Here's what it is. It is American Medical Association, American Psychiatric Association, insurance industry approved, which means that nobody's going to get sued because when Woodbridge gets diagnosed with 876312 PTSD, these medications in these intervals are appropriate and these therapies
That's right.
are appropriate. Nobody's getting
That's right.
sued. Well, wait a minute. Does that make Woodbridge better? Well, we don't really care about that. We're not going to get sued, and the institution goes on. Hopefully it does. Our protocol says it will. But you know what? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But the institution goes on. And our response to that is, screw that.
Yep, that's exactly right. I would tell you also on the, on the command side, the military leadership side, and the legal counsel, judge advocate side, again, completely low risk. This is the protocol. This is the accepted treatment plan. This is not going to get anybody in trouble for not doing the accepted norm to treat that individual. And so it becomes the worst category of no-brainer that there is out there.
All right, so now you admit you should publish what I'm going to send you, yes? I just want to get
Well, yeah, you're going to write me an article. Right?
Absolutely. That's, yeah, the mental health, it's called the Mental Health Path of a Warrior.
Yeah,
and included in that is the term post-traumatic winning, because we're Marines. We're not coexisting with shit. We're not, and again, you hear Admiral Stockdale, we will not endure this, all right? We will thrive here, because this is where the fight is. And you hear that, and it's like, okay. If Stockdale can do that in the Hanoi Hilton,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. There's a level of credibility there.
Right.
I've been fortunate enough to do a couple seminars with Admiral Stockdale when I was a captain, and I've heard him speak, and I've read pretty much everything he's written. And when someone like that can talk about philosophy. Okay, there's a level of credibility there a philosophy don from Oxford would not have unless he'd been through the same type of experiences that Admiral Stockdale had.
Right. And so to me, the one of the things we haven't done, and I originated the decision making stuff at the infantry officer course, and I believe it was the first straight up decision making thing ever taught. That came from walking behind lieutenants at the basic school, watching them struggle to make a decision, and then thinking, well, what do we teach them about it? And the answer was, there was a whole what now lieutenant thing, but we didn't talk about that. You know what? When you go ashore on Iwo Jima or Tarawa and your nervous system reacts, right, and it gushes adrenaline, you might wet your pants, you might puke, or you might defecate, it doesn't mean you're a chicken shit. It means your body just overloaded its system with adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And so as opposed to when that happened, you're like, oh, my God, I am going to fail here. What you should have thought was, hey, those meatheads in Quantico told me this was going to happen. You shake it down your leg and you keep fighting. It's normal. And so when I talked to John Allen, Major Allen at the time, I said, hey, sir, I think we should teach this. And he said, I think you're right. We should study decision making, and we've done it ever since. And this is kind of the same epiphany. We don't, on the front side, talk so much about mental health. We don't talk about the path you'll follow and how this thing goes full circle. And if you pay attention and you study it, our own culture, our own Marine Navy culture is replete with examples of people dealing with this successfully and coming home and not enduring, but thriving. And we are out of that mold, and we are going to do that. And it's such a different mindset, but it is education on the front side. Then you're going to hit these bumps, just like you do physical training for your body, and you might have to do physical therapy for it. You got to do the same thing for your brain and your soul,
exactly.
Because you
exactly.
can't be involved in this life and death business without it sticking to you. And so we're not going to play charades and fake like it doesn't matter, like it doesn't hurt, because it does hurt, and you're human, right? And you're going to have a PTSD menstrual cycle. What does that mean? It means that there's some days I can think about Sergeant Bazzarini and the way he died, and there's other times, and I can talk about it, and there's other days I can't come close without getting my allergies acting up, which is my code for getting tears in my eyes. Are you getting upset?
Right.
No, I have allergies. What are you allergic to? Air. That's why my tears are drying up, jackass. I'm moderately.
Yeah, that would be a great piece. I'd like you to.
I'm going to Camp Lejeune I'm not sure, October, November, to give this to the 2nd Marine Division, and hopefully Mike Etor is going to join me. You know Mike, right?
Yeah, I know Etor.
Great guy, and Mike Musselman going to join me, and so it's going to be, you know, credible guys, and the guys at Boulder Crest are excited to be on the preemptive side of it. Hey, this is what's in front of you, right? Right? Get this in your head. There's nothing wrong with you. This is normal if you're a warrior. So I'm excited. As you can tell, I'm moderately fired up, because it does speak to those things. And then the other thing is, by recognizing that young people may be traumatized before they even get here.
Exactly.
It's
that is
huge.
To me, that is the critical link in this. That also is, it's largely ignored. And I think in the last 15 years, we've fixed some of these problems, but my experience as a battalion commander in Iraq is that there were HIPAA firewalls up to prevent command knowledge, chain of command knowledge of some of these underlying pre-existing conditions, if you will, and their treatment amongst the Marines that we're responsible for. Trying to break that down and say, I'm battalion commander, I'm daddy, I need to know everything that's going on in my house, runs up against a brick wall on the medical side sometimes. Now, I think we've done some things policy-wise to fix that, to preclude that from happening.
But they're not always followed. And those
exactly.
those policy things, the problem is, we've quadrupled, maybe quintupled, I'm not even sure that I know what quintupled means, but I think it's five, the amount of mental health providers on bases, okay? Quality assurance in that, maybe not. And what goes on inside those therapy sessions is a patient-doctor privilege thing.
Correct.
Until you triple line, where you have suicidal or homicidal ideations. Then, by regulation, the commanding officer of the unit is supposed to be informed. so
right.
So they can take whatever action that is appropriate. Now, I went through this doing 8-day reports, which are the reports you have to file
yep.
after somebody's suicide, to the Assistant yep. Commandant of the Marine Corps. And in both cases, when I was the OPSO at MEF Headquarters Group, which in on the West Coast is 9th Comm, which is a huge battalion that goes all the time, in both instances, they had both, one had homicidal ideations, one had suicidal and homicidal. Neither time was a command known. Because we didn't hang out with these people in high school, and we didn't party with them in college. Okay, so there's a social gap there, and their perception is, if I tell you, you're going to put them out of the Marine Corps. The response
right.
is,
or you're just going to, render this Marine non-deployable. And number one, that'll tank
his
career, and number two, it'll aggravate some of the pre-existing emotional psychological issues because of the shame of being non-deployable
right.
and being singled out by the chain of command
right.
and the
response to that is, Doc, now that he's dead, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be better were he home with his parents and the people that love him, getting the treatment that he deserved instead of you making a decision that you don't have the right to make? And
exactly.
and we all know the answer to that. So I just gave that advice to a friend of mine, recently, and I was asking about, have you looked at the classified notes in his or her medical record relative to mental health treatment? He said no, and I said, got to do that, because that wall's got to get knocked down so that
yeah.
we can do the right thing. But to me, though, the recognition that, for instance, what percentage in the current day Marine Corps of suicide has to do with combat? 5, 10, 0? I mean, not very much.
Maybe less than that.
Yeah, not very much. So what's going on?
But in the popular conception, we talk about what civilians who eventually become the employers, become the caregivers, become the neighbors, their understanding of it is, it's all combat related.
Right. And I think a lot of times when we talk about it, when we say PTSD, people think combat. When I say trauma, look, and the picture that I give, one of the things that I'll say is, I'm not going to ask you to put your hand up, but wiggle your toes and don't anybody look at anybody else's boots if any of these apply to you, right? You've seen violent crime affect somebody. You've been raped, you've been or sexually assaulted, you've been the victim of some kind of physical abuse, right? Or you've had the death or witnessed the death, and you start looking. Okay, so you start listing all that stuff. So you're sitting here as a traumatized person, and it has nothing to do with combat. And guess what? It doesn't make any difference, right? We have to go down this road of mental health, and we got to get smart about it. We got to make you smart about it so you can handle it. And that's education is what we're talking about. The other interesting thing, Woody, and the way this, I love this because it's all integrated into our culture. You come in as an entry level Marine, and one of the things you're going to learn is why it's important for you to keep your honor clean. And I think you and I have talked about this before. You keep your honor clean for you, right? Cue the video because they're YouTube freaks, right? Cue the video of PFC Barnado Simpson 20 years after Mely, and listen to him talk as he held his son as he was dying from a gunshot wound in the head from a stray round that happened to hit his kid. I knew that God had taken his revenge on me. In his face, I saw the face of the little boy that I killed at Mely. And in 10 years, when you come back for the 30th anniversary of Mely, I'm probably not going to be here. And he puts a bullet in his head, I want to say a year and a half after the interview. And so the reason you keep your and so this is mental health stuff. The reason you keep your honor clean isn't for the Marine Corps. It's not because it's in the song, which is kind of interesting that they even put it in the song back then. But it's for you. And all this ties into this theme of what it is to win, to go home a full-up brown human being, understanding the pitfalls of the path you're going to walk and being capable of dealing with it. And it's all steeped in Keep Your Honor Clean, in Admiral Stockdale, in things that Viktor Frankl wrote, and in our spirit of selfless service in our lives that affects most of us that serve, and wanting to go home and then do that again. And it's this, I think it's this circle of this warrior's circle that if we talk about it and make people smart about, then we win. We win. We experience those Grinch moments. And
right.
I think that's what's cool. All right. Well, we killed most of the hour, Woody. Nice going. We haven't even talked about the Gazette
nice,
yet.
Nice job. Nice job, man.
Nice going. This is ever difficult. But
so no. I've got a hard stop at noon. Let me talk a little bit about two. Again, I've mentioned that I've had a busy summer with things not necessarily directly connected to the magazine, but some supporting efforts. So let me talk a little bit about two of those, and maybe we can get some questions as well.
Sure.
The first one, you mentioned YouTube, etc. So the association and foundation have been partnered with History Division here at Quantico, and also with Marine Corps University. Thanks to some generous donations from a former Marine, Vietnam vet, a gentleman who was an FO on Operation Starlight, and got out of the Marine Corps as a captain, and went on to do extremely well in business. We have been tasked by the CG of the university to put together a series of podcasts, audiovisual podcasts, leveraging pieces or excerpts from some of the oral history collection of the Marine Corps. And so we've completed the pilot program, which is 11 episodes of what we're calling Core Voices.
Nice.
And these are going to be made available by the end of this month, beginning of October, for download or streaming off our website. There's an audio only version, and then there's a audio visual version as well. But we've got interviews as an example, or examples. Chesty Puller talking about counterinsurgency in Nicaragua.
You know, and I've been bitching at the Historical Division about this shit for 2 years, and so this is, so I would call and say, hey, I'm looking for like audio from Marine leaders, and I saw General Barrow testifying in front on YouTube, testifying about women in combat.
Right.
And I was looking for, because I've heard such great things about General Barrow, what a great man he was, what a warrior, and I'd go looking for, and I just did it recently with John Ripley. You mean there's only 2 6-minute segments about John Ripley discussing, you know, like, come on, there can't be. And then
now,
what I got,
I'll report to you that there isn't. There's much more than that.
Well, send us what you're looking for, and we'll look at it. And I said, well, it's not indexed someplace. I can't search it. And they said,
not.
No. Congratulations.
There's two pieces to this. And what you're starting to describe is the longer-term effort here to preserve, first of all, and catalog, meaning make searchable, the entire audio archives of the Marine Corps. And I mean, when I say preserve, a lot of this, or some of this audio information, is really at risk. We're talking about interviews done during World War II that are on wax cylinders, very old technology, analog technology for recording, things that are on reel-to-reel tapes, cassettes, a whole variety of media that all have to be preserved and converted to a durable digital format.
That's
a multi-year effort.
Yeah, can I tell people the treatment of those assets prior to recording them to a digitized version is absolutely critical. It's not like, yeah, get the player and put it on.
Right.
It's, you got to take the humidity out of these recordings.
Exactly.
You got to restore them, and it's not easy stuff, but it is just
It's not easy. It requires real expertise, which luckily we have, leveraging the University of South Carolina's archival programs. But it's also not cheap,
no.
And so that's where the fundraising and the donor development side comes in. The nearer term issue, and this is what I when I started, is this pilot program. So one of the things I'm going to do, Mac, I'm going to send you some previews of this so you can get an idea of what we've put together. And then once they're released. And available, we'll look at a way that we can kind of link our website so your listeners can get to this stuff in a more streamlined way. It's some really amazing things out there. We just for the pilot program, I mentioned Chesty Puller, got General Vandegrift talking about the landings on Guadalcanal and the lack of Navy support. General Peterson, first African American fighter pilot in the Marine Corps. Talking about what it was like to be that person in 1952, and essentially getting arrested at the officers' club at El Toro for impersonating an officer. little events. Major General Marion Carroll talking about being a first lieutenant pilot at the Battle of Midway on day one, going up to a sky full of Japanese Zeros and being one of the few guys that that made it back. So there's some real jewels there just in this pilot program.
Wow.
We're going to be making that available to everyone, unlimited access, and then we're going to use that also as a consciousness builder to try to get more people interested in the long-term preservation effort of the audio archives.
Hey, I'll tell you what, congratulations. I can't tell you how excited, because to hear those guys talk in their own their own words,
yes.
And I did that with Senator McCain recently, Captain McCain, United States Navy retired,
mm-hmm.
but when he passed away, I don't want to hear a talking head and bring on somebody to talk about Senator McCain. Listen to him in his own words, and I played an interview that I found where he talks about his thoughts about why the PTSD rate was so low. He said, you know, when they knew they were going to have to let us go, they put us all together towards the end of our confinement. And we had largely lived separately at that point. But we did religious services. We had discussions about different books. We mentored each other, and we were around such great leadership, and it was just so exciting to listen. But it's in his words, and
exactly.
that's what you're doing. It's such powerful stuff. That's all. I can't tell you how exciting that is, because I've heard that the archives has like it's like the holy of holies in terms of the stuff they have in there.
It is, and it's also, to be very transparent. It's also something of a needle in a haystack, too.
Right.
And there are hours and hours of these oral interviews, oral history interviews. And, it's essentially a conversation between a historian, either a field historian or a more academic historian and the principal, the interviewee. And, it can be, a little tedious to go through, all of that. But,
right.
Again, we've got some real gold nuggets that have come to the surface as this pilot program, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
No, I'll be straight up fired up.
That's been side hustle number one. Side hustle number two. Anyone who's looked at the magazine since August has seen this advertised, but. Another opportunity for you and your listeners to really contribute to some of those things we started the conversation with, these big questions about the future of the Marine Corps. We're hosting a community of interest online to solicit ideas for the next commandant. This is called the CMC 38 community of interest. We've sort of called it crowdsourcing the future. And this was born from an initiative, really a conversation between Brigadier General Wortman, the Commanding General of the Marine Corps Warfighting Lab, and our leadership here, to put this out to the broadest audience possible, obviously Gazette readers, members of the association, anybody can contribute, but it's a web-based discussion forum. You go to the site, there's a web form that you can fill out and essentially put together the skeleton of an issue paper on any topic that fits into these 100-weight question categories. You know, what's out there in the future operating environment that the next commandant's going to have to contend with? What are the big bets, big investment opportunities that the next commandant will have to apply resources against a challenge for the Corps? And then the third category is what sort of institutional action, internal Marine Corps policy business will the next commandant need to address for the good of the service going forward? And when we say going forward, going charting a course out to about 2030, because when you look at what the next commandant will influence, again, in terms of those investment decisions and policy decisions, that's the future horizon. So it's user friendly, very easy to get there and put your ideas out. You can read what other Marines have submitted, but it's not like a blog. You can't snark and troll the site and snipe at somebody else's ideas. If you agree or disagree, or you write your own input and populate that that form to put your thoughts out there.
You know,
it's anonymized, so you know nobody's visible on the site, but we do take some identification information. And the reason for that is if you're a member of the Association Foundation and you submit your work, we automatically put you in a lottery or a drawing for a $500 gift card. So we've had a couple folks win already, a lieutenant won and a retired colonel won. So that's an incentive for those members of the association to participate in this.
Musselman and I are convinced that the comment sections of most publications provide all the rational basis that you need for the forced mass extinction of the population of the planet. It's just they're just that it can't come soon enough. Shut those things off. They're just the stupidest things in the world. I know you got to run. In 60 seconds, give me one memory you have of John Ripley.
Colonel Ripley actually came out to the field, spoke to my IOC class, when I was at TBS back in the 80s, and he talked about knowing technical skills to the point where you didn't need the reference anymore. In other words, I think he started off by, you know, hey, take out your platoon commander's notebooks. You know, we all had that kind of blue-green platoon commander notebook, and, you know, we all laminated them and dummy-corded them and had them in our cargo pockets. And, you know, you had a bunch of other, you know, you had your 60 mortar card and your demo card. He said, take out the demo card and look at that. He's like, look, you've got to have some things committed to memory or you're not going to be able to do them under pressure in combat. You've got to internalize some things. You're not going to be able to internalize everything, but there are some skills that you have got to have wired into your brain so you don't need the reference anymore. And one of the things he said that I remember is the more you know, the less you're going to need in terms of carrying those references and books around. It's like, yeah, there were officers carried out, you know, an ammo can full of pubs. And it's like, no, you're not going to be able to use that. So you've got to put some things hardwired into your brain. And, you know, the training at IOC did a great job of that. Later on, training at Ranger School did a good job of that, of you know, forcing you to put these techniques, and in his case, this is what you know, helped him actually you know, set the demo charges up for the bridge at Dong Hai's, is having that skill, that TTP, that technique, how to use this stuff, wired into you, so you're not wasting time, or worse, doing it wrong, and not having the effect that you think you're going to have with a crater in charge or a steel cutting charge, etc. You know, you don't just make that stuff up. There's a right way and a wrong way to do it, and you know, if you do it the wrong way, in the best case, you're just ineffective. In the worst case, you've cost people's lives.
Jawboning blasting caps with your teeth, right?
Yeah.
Let me tell you, talk about that. Talk about a manly event, like,
yeah.
Right? And you could go. And it's funny because he said, "Please, his prayer, please God, don't let me screw this up." Amen. Right? You say that just before the blasting cap goes into your mouth. Oh my God. What am I doing? Anyway, Woody, thank you very much for the visit. First of all, congratulations. I can't tell you how excited I am about that, because that stuff is priceless, literally, and it also will add incredible value to, not only to your website, but the historical division and the museum, as they say, look, we've got to have this content. It's just too great for us not to have over here, and we begin to share our incredible culture with more and more people. And so whether we're talking about trauma, and we believe in winning relative to trauma, or we're talking about sharing these interviews, our culture is pretty incredible, and you and I are both in the same business of sharing that story. And congratulations on obviously what has been a great summer, and in spite of our absence and your junior status relative to our relationship. Well done, my friend.
Hey, Mac, you know, we're just not going to go there. You know, what were we wearing when we got off active duty?
No,
let's just stop right there.
All right. Hey, thank you. Good luck.
Yep.
All right.
You too.
There
Talk to you soon. Out here.
Chris Woodbridge here on All Marine Radio. Let me just tell you, you've heard me ask those questions. And yesterday, Ed, when he came on, I was asking him before he went on, hey, if I come back there, can you take me into, like, the Holy of Holies? And he said, man, it's so cool. They have such great stuff here. And, Mac, you need to come back and see it. You would, like, if you like history, you would go bananas. You would go absolutely positively bananas over this kind of stuff. Here's an email for you. Hi, Mac. September 13th, 1984, Marine Corps Recruit Depot, Paris Island, Platoon 3081, India Company. On this day, 34 years ago, I earned the title United States Marine, Semper Fidelis. Chris, a Marine, congratulations. I can't even tell you, and that kind of brings back a memory, right, for all of us. When you get called Marine, it's the most exciting thing in the world, because you've been told that you're a worthless piece of garbage, and you will never ever sew that onto your title, onto your uniform. Back in the day, we used to iron it on. You will never ever ever do that. So we'll take a quick break. Gunner standing by. So you're gonna hear, Operation Big Voice, right? You're gonna hear Operation Big Voice as we do Skype. So we continue here on a Thursday. My thanks to Chris Woodbridge. I'll tell you what. Yeah, exactly. Mac, you're a geek. I know that. But we'll take a quick break. Mike Musselman joins us next as we continue on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it. The one and only All Warrior Radio Network. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial.